Marshall, will you call the court to order?
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Chief Judge Siegel, Judge Connolly, and Judge Frisch. The Honorable Susan L. Siegel presiding. Calling case 824-0772 in the matter of the civil commitment of Brendan Allen Temple.
We have only one case on our oral calendar today, and appellant's counsel is here. Respondent did not file a brief, so we will only hear from appellant's counsel in this matter. As you know, this is being live streamed now, but only an audio recording will be available later and posted online. And Mr. Moose, please, what? How do you pronounce your name? Moose
Moose Brugger.
Brugger? Moose Brugger, Mr. Moose Brugger. Will you, when you're ready, please introduce yourself, and you have 15 minutes.
Thank you. May it please the court. I'm Anthony Moose Brugger, attorney for the appellant, Brendan Temple. Brendan Temple was civilly committed by the Dodge County District Court by order dated May 1st. Of this year. We're arguing that the district court's findings lack the specificity necessary to support its conclusion that Mr. Temple poses a substantial likelihood of physical harm to himself or others. The facts the court relied on are hearsay statements and a police report that Mr. Temple was allegedly driving a four-wheeler, I should say, while under the influence. Had allegedly made suicidal and homicidal statements, and that there was allegedly an unloaded shotgun in the home. Now, although operating a vehicle under the influence of alcohol is illegal, it is not a sufficient fact to support a civil commitment. I've read that there's about a
We had a
645,000.
15-year-old, however, on the vehicle with him. So that seems to be endangerment. And we also have this information in medical records. So why can't the court rely on that or statements made to the police or in the court's expert report here? What why is that not admissible.
Well, they all stem from statements made by Mr. Temple's fiance, a Ms. Chilson. And so she made these statements to the police, potentially others, but she never testified to them. And she was never questioned, although she did testify at the preliminary hearing. She was never questioned about those statements. And she was making those statements, the record reflects, in an attempt to get Mr. Temple help. So it's very possible that she was embellishing when she was making certain statements, under the belief that you know, she was saying things to try and get her fiance into treatment.
But Mr. Utsberger, I mean, didn't your client admit that he had an alcohol addiction that he could not manage on his own? Is that a correct statement?
I think that's a fair statement, yes. And so I think it's not an issue of whether or not he has an alcohol dependency issue. I believe he does admit that. But the issue is did it pose a substantial likelihood of risk to himself or others?
But did the district court actually rely on these hearsay statements that you are identifying in making its determination? And if so, which of the findings are tied to those hearsay statements or allegedly hearsay statements?
Well, I think the court must have. I don't have the exact findings. I don't think of where they would have shown up, but essentially that was the only evidence the court had in regards to any potential harm Mr. Temple could to make to himself or others, and everybody kind of, you know, once those statements were put into that police report. You know, then the medical examiners read that police report and it shows up in their report. So it just there was no new evidence other than those initial statements.
Can I ask, is there any authority that where, I mean, what I'm hearing you say, counsel, is that the expert report upon which the district court inevitably relied is sort of based on this domino effect of a hearsay statement that was relied on and then relied on again. Is there any authority where we've looked at that or Minnesota court has looked at that and discounted the conclusions of an expert report if there's some indication that the report is based on, at least in part, a hearsay statement?
I'm not aware of anything in regards to an expert report specifically. I think the case I cited, the civil commitment of Williams, kind of goes to this a bit in regards to, you know, if you are relying on hearsay statements, that those statements should be vetted, you know, should be examined for reliability. And it doesn't seem that that was done at all. You know, not even the police were called to testify to those statements. And there was no findings by the court, you know, that anything, that the statements were vetted at all.
Counsel did, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's my understanding the shotgun was not his, he borrowed it. Is that a fair statement?
Yes.
Does the record indicate why he borrowed it?
Other than I believe himself? It does. I believe he testified that he had a rodent of some sort that he was going to exterminate with it
in his house.
Correct.
So I mean, he was going to use a shotgun to kill a rodent in his house.
Oh no, not in his house. I can't recall now. I don't know if it was a gopher or something out to do outside.
Thank you.
In regards to, you know, again, these statements that were made, I think another, you know, piece here that that would support maybe, you know, possible embellishment of the facts by the fiance, or also just the supporting the fact that, you know, his history doesn't lend itself to the conclusion that he's going to be a harm to self or others, is that he doesn't have any history of involvement with law enforcement. You know, nothing, at least in the last 15 years. You know, so statements that this happened, I think the statement was that this happened, you know, week after week. You know, if that was really true, you know, there should have been a history of it, a recorded history of it. And, you know, statements of, you know, if he was really intending on harming himself, I mean, it just doesn't jive with, you know, somebody saying that they're going to kill themselves week after week after week, month after month. You know, really what that is just, you know, somebody who's getting drunk and making a statement to their loved one, you know, for attention, more or less, but with actually no intent of harming himself or anybody else. So, you know, when the court concludes that all that leads to him, you know, being a harm, it's just pure speculation. There is no real facts to support that he is a harm to himself or anyone else.
Counsel, I think it would be helpful if you summarize the testimony about alternatives to commitment that came in at the hearing, and give us your best argument on why we should remand it to the district court for consideration of whether commitment is a least restrictive means.
So yes, the district court failed to make any findings on why the lesser restrictive alternatives of a stay of commitment was rejected or the reasons why she rejected them. There were two doctors who testified Mayo Clinic doctor and the court examiner. Both of those doctors testified that a intensive outpatient treatment program would have been appropriate. The
Mayo doctor was pretty firm that he was actually recommending inpatient treatment. I mean, isn't that right? So can we kind of surmise from the testimony and the order that the district court did write that she found that part of the testimony to be more credible, or what's wrong with that?
Well, he did testify that he stuck to that opinion. But I guess I'll note that he did also say that a reasonable alternative would be intensive outpatient. I think that's important. But what's also important is that he was basing his opinion on an evaluation that he did on April 15th. And the record also reflects that the current treatment team, the treatment team that was working through him after with Mr. Temple after that, on April 26th, had made a recommendation for an outpatient treatment program to Fountain Centers. That was an index number 22, a medical report from April 26th. And Mr. Burton or Burson, Dr. Burson testified that he was not involved in that referral and that he was just basing his opinion on his, you know, prior evaluation. And certainly what I think the medical records do reflect is that circumstances change over time. And even if Mr. Temple was a harm or a threat or had all these issues going on April 15th, they all opine that he didn't at the time of the hearing. At the time of April 26th, after another CD evaluation was done, they were all recommending that he could be, you know, released and participate in a stay of commitment. And I mean, of course, medical doctors wouldn't say stay of commitment. No, but
yeah, both Drs. Tomford and Burson, though, I mean, they agreed that he met the criteria. And as a matter of fact, what didn't you, well, maybe it was just that he had a mental illness that was conceded in front of the district court.
And I think he conceded that he has, both, you know, mental illness, as far as, I forget everything, but anxiety is one of them, and depression, and alcoholism, And you know, maybe it's not super important. Well, I think it is super important that he didn't concede that he was a harm. You know, he's basically a person who wanted to get treatment. He wanted to get into some sort of.
Both Drs. Tomford and Burson, though, thought both opined that he met the criteria for commitment.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
But you know, I think again, importantly. You know, just because you meet that criteria, okay, what is the result? What's your treatment going to be? And the examiner did opine in his report that it should have been a stay of commitment and an intensive outpatient programming.
Is there anything in the record to indicate that the girlfriend had some motive to fabricate or overemphasize his problems?
Nothing in
the record, for any sort of nefarious reasons.
Nothing in the record to indicate that. But in regards
then
to
why wouldn't we? I mean, you know, if that's not the case, then you know, there's the doctors, and then there's the loved ones who are with them on a daily basis. And she seemed to think very clearly that you know he needs to be, you know, confined. Why wouldn't we give that weight? Why would we say the district court should not have given that weight?
I don't believe that was her testimony. She testified that, you know, yes, she wanted him to receive treatment, but that he was safe to return home back on the 19th of April, and that he was not a threat to her or a threat to her children, which I think is very important, because who would know him better than her? Probably
Did
nobody.
Did she know he had the shotgun at the time she made that statement?
Yes.
Was that question about on the 19th or when she made the call to the police? Because she it wasn't there any longer because the police took the shotgun into storage. Correct?
Right. Yes. The shotgun was not there on April 19th when she testified at the preliminary hearing. And whether or not that had a factor in her testimony, she felt that he was safe. I think she did. There was maybe some confusion about whether or not he ever made a homicidal statement versus a suicidal statement. But I believe she attempted to correct that, you know, she never ever felt threatened by him.
Right. Yeah, if you want to sum up, unless the panel has more questions.
Thank you. I think that just the appropriate result here would be that, this would be corrected to indicate that Mr. Temple should have a stay of a commitment versus a full commitment. He has participated now in treatment. He's living at home, doing well.
All right. Thank you very much. The case is now submitted, and we will issue our opinion within the statutory time period. Thanks. And again, apologies for the late start to our oral argument.
Thank you.
Thank you.